Today's shiur is Masechta Chulin Daf Mem Zayin. We will begin Be'ezer Hashem Yisbarach on Daf Mem Zayin Amud Aleph at the top of the Amud. The Gemara continues to discuss the Loch of Sirchus. As we discussed in our previous shiur, a sircha is a lesion, a blister on the surface of the ray, on the surface of the lung. And the question, of course, is, when we speak about that type of a situation, what we need to know is, as Rashi pointed out, that the sircha may just be covering up a hole that was there previously. And if the sircha is covering up a hole, then that animal, that lung had a hole in it, as we discussed in our previous shiur, along with a hole, is a trefa. There are three reasons why a sircha is a problem. What we Rishonim explain that a sircha may be a problem. Rashi explains because the concern is, as we said, that there was a hole on it. Another explanation is that the sircha, which is the way the Rambam seems to learn, that the sircha makes it difficult, if not impossible, to properly check the status of this lung. And as we've been discussing in our shiurim, the halacha does require that a lung be examined. The third pshat that the Rishonim suggests, I think this is Tosfos pshat, is because you have that sircha there, it's certainly a situation that may cause that the animal will develop a defect. And since it's very likely to develop a defect, the halacha already looks at it as if it's defective, as if it's a trefa. So therefore begins the Gemara Amar Rava, Hani Tarti Buri the Smicha Adadi. If you have two sirchis that are next to each other, Lesla B'dukosai, there's no way of examining if there's a hole under there. And therefore, the halacha is we have to treat this animal like it's a trefa. Chada, if we have one sircha, Umaschazi Katarti, because it looks like two, because it has a split in the middle of that sircha, says the Gemara Metzin and Silua, we should bring a pin, a needle, ubazinale, and pierce it. Ish shafchin lahadadi, if the liquid that was in there travels from one side of the sircha to the other side of the sircha, that's an indication, the chadahi, that this is only one sircha. If you love, but if the liquid doesn't travel to each other, then the halach is tati ninu, it's considered like two sirchas, and therefore it's considered a trefa. When the halach is, of course, say all the rishonim and achronim, that even if the two sirchas that we have, the liquid is traveling one to the other, doesn't mean that it's kosher. All it means is as follows. We began this year by discussing the problem of a sircha. We're also going to discuss if and how a sircha could be examined. And what the Gemara is teaching us here is that if it's two sirchas that attach to each other, there's no possibility of examination. The only thing we could say about this animal is that it is treif. When the two sirchas, however, when it's only one sircha, so the halacha says this is a type of situation that we could examine. But of course, that examination is necessary. And without examination, we're going to have to consider the animal non-kosher. Continues the Gemara of Amar Rava, as we have been discussing. Chamisha oni isla l'reya. Every lung has five lungs. Apa kapa garva. And when we shech the animal and hang the animal from its leg, and we're facing the animal. Apo klapa gavra, when the animal is facing us, what you're going to find is that you'll have tlosa miyamina, betata smola. Three lobes, three unas on the right side, and two unas on the left side. That means really in the animal, the three on the left side and two on the right side. But here, the animal was cut and is facing down. Since it was cut and is facing down, that's why everything's just the opposite. It looks the opposite, says the Gemara. Tlasi v'min of a tarantum smola. Chaser, if it's missing an una, if there's only two on one side, if there's only two on the right side, there's only one on the left side, a yeser, or you have an extra one, a chalif, the ones that are supposed to be in the right were on the left, and one was supposed to be on the left are on the right. All of these cases, says the Gemara, are their trefa. It says, so the question is that if there's only two on the right side, it's already chaser. And if there's three on the left side, it's yeser. What does this mean? So what does chalof mean? So he says that what, so I saw that the Tfu Shor explains, what the Gemara means to say is that you have the requisite amount and you have more on the left side than you do on the right side, but you have the wrong number. So even though you have the left having more than the right, which is what is supposed to be, but we would think the fact that this has, and they have the right has more than the left, so we have everything that's required. It just doesn't have the right number. We would think that is not a disqualification. Teaches us the Gemara that is a disqualification. Says the Gemara, who is Serta? There was a Reya that had an extra Una. Dosla Kameh the Merema that was brought to Merema to ask a question, is it a kosher or not? Amalei, my Amalach, and the Rav Acha said to the butcher that asked the question, he asked him, what did a Mema answer you when you asked him? Amalei, Achshur Nili, he said that the animal is kosher. Amalei, Hadashayla Kamei, he said to him, go ask him the same question again. I am concerned that he didn't really examine the situation adequately, because Rav Acha's opinion was that actually Merema should have said that this animal is not kosher. But he didn't want to be that explicit, so he said, just have him look at it again. Amalei, so he did that. He went back to Merema, and Amalei and Merema said to the Shoichid, Zil Amalei Lamanda Yosef Ababa, go tell Rav Abba, go tell the person that's sitting on the porch, that means Rav Abba, we don't pass him like Rav, that, and the fact that it has an extra Una is not a reason for disqualification. And in fact, Rashi, quoting his Rebbe, says that is the halacha, that an extra Una does not make the animal treif. And the Ritvaz asks, why is that? We have a rule that kol yeser, that if an animal has something extra, more than it's supposed to have, the halacha notel, it's considered like it's missing. Because the way I always understand what that means is, if a person is supposed to, Baruch Hashem, have five fingers, so there's a certain amount of energy that's needed to operate five fingers. And if somebody has six fingers, then that amount of energy is going to need to be divided amongst six, not just amongst five. And because of that, each finger is not going to be really considered as if it's operating properly. And therefore, the question here is that why, asked the Mefarshim, is Rashi quick to be lenient and say if it has an extra Una, it's not a problem, why don't we say kol yeser k'notel dame? So the Meiri answers this question, and the Meiri says that, of course, having six fingers, as we just used as an example, instead of five fingers is unusual. And since having six fingers instead of five fingers is unusual, the concern that we articulated is very real. But in this, that the lung should end up having more, that is not unusual. And since it's having more unus than normal, it's not considered something that's unusual. And since it's not considered something that's unusual, that's why it won't be considered treif. Furthermore, the Marie Weil says that even though Rashi is being lenient, as our Gemara is just teaching us, it's only in a case, as we've been learning, that you're going to have more on the right side than on the left side. That has to remain consistent, and that's actually the halacha that the Rima says, that even though we're being lenient more when there's more than required, it's only the leniency is only in place when we still have more on the right side than the left side. Moreover, the Yam Shoshloimus says that's only acceptable up to 10 unos. But if we're going to have more than 10 unos, then that's not acceptable under any circumstances. Vahani Mili, furthermore, says the Gemara, these things, when we speak about the lungs, it's only the kind of bedore de une, that lined up along the place where you're supposed to have the unos. Avo beni beni, if you have a sircha growing out between the unos, that's going to be a trefa. Indeed, says the Gemara, hu beni beni, there was a situation where there was a lung brought that had a sircha between the unos. That was brought to Rav Ashi as a shaila. Sover Rav Ashi l'mitrafa. Rav Ashi said that it should be considered treif. Amalei Rav Huna mar bar Avya. Rav Huna mar bar Avya said to Rav Ashi, kol hani chai v'bereisi. The animals that graze outdoors, hachi islam, they have these extra unas. The karlei tapchi, and the butchers call this extra una a nusa devarda. They call it a rose, it's called like a rose petal. And since it's considered like a rose petal, it's not considered something that's abnormal. It's normal, and therefore it's not going to represent a trefa. Hahu, Beni, says the Gemara, Vahani Mili, but says the Gemara, this is only in the case, Megavoi, that they're facing the part of the lung that touches the stomach. Avo agabob, if it's on the other side of the lung, afilu katarf da asa, even it's very small, there it's not something that's supposed to be, and therefore the halacha is that it would be a trefa. Amar Rafram, says the Gemara, hai reya, the daimila fusa, a reya that looks like a piece of wood, the halacha is that it's trefa. Ikadamri, so says the Gemara, what is the issue that makes it a trefa when it looks like a piece of wood? Ikadamri b'chazusa. Some say that it depends on the look. If it looks like a piece of wood, then the halach is that it's going to be a trefa. Ikadamri b'gishashta, that it when you touch it, it feels like a piece of wood, not like a reya. Ikadamri, others say that it's referring to neficha. When it's blown up, it looks like it gets white, like a piece of wood. Ikadamri de pechiza. Some say when we're talking about it being like a piece of wood and being a problem is that when it's hard. Ikadamri de shia. And some say it has to be smooth, that the less lechetucha de uni. The lobes are separated and there's like a crack between the lobes. If this looks like one big piece, then the halacha is that it wouldn't be considered it would not be considered a kosher lung. It says the Gemara, Amarava, kechula, if the color of the reya is blue, kshera. Kediusa, if it's black, if it got this color and it's black, trefa. Damarav chanina, shachar, when you have something black, adam hu, black represents really the color red, Ella shaloka. It got this color because of a defect, and therefore, because it's like an inflammation, an infection, and therefore, it's going to be considered treif. This is a diseased lung. Yeruka, if it's green, or to say yellow, it's kshera. Why is it kshera? Midir Rabnosan, based on what Rabnosan is about to teach us in the Gemara. Aduma, if it's red, kshera. Again, from what Rav Nosson teaches us. The Tanya. And the Gemara tells us, where do we have this entire discussion? It says, Rav Nosson teaches us, Pamachas halach de l'karche ayam. He says, I was once traveling to cities outside of Eretz Yisrael, and bar isha achs lefanai, and there was a woman that came to see me, Shemala b'na Rishon Meis. She did a bris mila on her first child, and he passed away, Sheni Umeis. And so too happened by the second one. Shlishi, Haviyasu Lafanai, And now there was the third child, and she brought this child to me to ask the question. And the halacha is, the halacha teaches us that you have a child, that his brothers have a chazaka, that mesu makas mila, that they've died because of the bris mila. The halacha is we don't do bris mila on such a child. Furthermore, even though throughout Shas we have a machloikus, Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel, that the halacha is that how many times is a chazaka established? Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that a chazaka is established after three events. Rebbe holds it's established after two events. Here, and normally we pass it like Rav Shimon Elazar, that a chazaka is established after three events. Here we say that two events are enough to establish a chazaka. And the reason that two events are enough to establish a chazaka here, going back to a subject that we've learned early in Amsechta, is Chamira Sakanta Misura. We treat Sakana more seriously than Isser, and therefore, since this is a question of Sakonas Nefashos, two times is enough. Amatili, Matila, so Verisi, Shoya Adam, and he says that I looked at this child, and I saw that this child, Rav Nosson says, had a very red complexion. Amatila, so he says, I told her, Biti Himtinali, wait to do a bris mila, Achi Bola Bidoma, until the blood is totally absorbed in his body, and then you could do the bris mila, the antinala, and she indeed waited mala saw, and she did the bris then, and v'chaya, and he survived, and the halach is, and that because of gratitude to what he did, hayikarnas and nasan abavli, al shemi, they called him nasan abavli because of mine, says Rashi, hatinaloi. This is a situation of pikuach nefesh, and therefore we have no right to do the bris. Says the Rambam, in Perek Aleph from Hilchas Mila Locha Yudches, Shakonas Nefosh Yestoichas Akol, V'efshel Amoyla Achaz Man, V'efshel Ahach Nefesh Achaz Mishrol. So Rambam says, doing a bris mila on this child, while he's not well, is a question of Sakonas Nefoshes, which takes precedence in all the areas of Halacham. Then the Rambam adds that we could always do the breast later. And then the Rambam adds that we can't, if something would happen to him, it's not reversible. So the Achronim ask that we know that Halacha is v'chai behem, and Chazal teaches us v'lo yishyamus behem, that we have to do everything to remain alive. So why does the Rambam add all these different reasons that we could do the bris later? What is the point of the Rambam explaining? So the Avni Nezer answers that the Gemara Masechta Gittin Daf Nun Zayin Amud Beis teaches us that the pasuk says Kelecha Ragnu Kol Hayoyim Zeh Mila. The Klai Yisrael are ready to do the mitzvah of bris mila with Mesiris Nefesh. So we would think that since the bris mila is such an important mitzvah, Kelecha Ragnu Kol Hayoyim, we should do the bris mila right away. And even if it represents sakonas nefashos, maybe the bris mila is a different type of a mitzvah. To which the Rambam says, it might be a fair consideration what you are saying. But says the Rambam, there's no reason to do the bris mila earlier. The reason that there's no reason to do the bris mila earlier, says the Rambam, because a bris mila could always be done later. You know, sometimes a person is ready to be mois nefesh for a mitzvah or not to do an aveira because that's not something that could be reversed. So if it's not something that's reversed, a person can maybe be ready to be mois nefesh. But here, says the Rambam, there's no issue. Just wait until the child will be fine. And it will be waiting till the child will be fine. We'll be able to do the bris mila then. And therefore there's no right in such a halacha, in such a situation, to make the bris mila earlier. Shupa macha, says the Gemara, Rav Nosson reports, Shupa macha salachti l'medinas kaputkia. I once went to the city of Kaputkia. And Bas Isha l'fana shemala b'na risha v'meis, same type of situation, she did a bris mila on her first son, and passed away sheni u'meis, shlishi, and now she had a third son, hevoyesa l'fana, and the question was brought to me, should she do a bris or not? And I saw that this child had a greenish complexion, yellowish complexion. And I saw that they did not do a bris. And I told the Bita Imtinaloi, Achipa by Dama, wait until this child gets a normal colored complexion. Imtinala, and indeed she waited. And Mola I saw, and she did a bris, the Chaya, and the Baruch Shem survived. And they called him Nosan Abavli because of what, in gratitude for what I did in Paschim for them under these circumstances. Of course, there's an interesting discussion based on this Gemara if one could call somebody a name after a living person. The Sefer Chassidim says that the Nochrim commonly call their children on the name of their parents or of living people, and there's no problem. But by Klal Yisrael, there are many that are concerned, and he quotes actually a chidah. The chidah says, the pasuk says, "Kara b'shmeisam ale adomais," that we don't call a person, but you don't call somebody by that name until ale adomais. Until that person is adamus, that he's already buried in the ground. However, there are many that have the minig to call people, to give name by people who are alive. Certainly, I saw the Noam HaMelech says that if you give a name after a tzaddik, then that causes that child should become also a tzaddik. And maybe therefore there's more reasoning to be lenient to call baby after the name of a living person. But the Mishnah Halachas says that there might be a nafkamina between a person who is a tzaddik gomer, that there, even though he's alive, you could give a name after him, versus a person who's not tzaddik gomer, that we have to be more concerned. Furthermore, I saw that the Sefer Chashuki Chemet has a very big discussion that there was a couple, the husband was a Sfardi, that they have the minig that they give a name after living people who are still alive, and the wife is an Ashkenazi, and she doesn't want to give a name after a person is alive. And the question, and also in the question that they're discussing, apparently the father was not completely emotionally well. And the question was, they had a bris, and at the bris, the mother told the mother to give a name, after whatever name. And then the father, I don't know if he wasn't at the bris or he wasn't well at the time of the bris, found out what happened and was very upset and insisted the name should be given after the name should be given after his father who is still alive. So the question is, what is the halacha here? The first question is, who has the right to give the name, to give the first name? In many places, the minig is that we felt that the mother has the right to give the name, has the right over the first name. The Mefarshim explained why is the mother given this privilege. One explanation is because, as we see often in Shas, in those times, the wife left her parents' home when she got married. And because she had to give up her life to get married, she deserves the name. Another pshat is that since it was typical that the wife's family supported the new couple, so in gratitude for that, they got the name. And the third shot is that I saw from Chaim Kanievsky that the name is the wife has to go through the pain of pregnancy and labor, so she gets that first name. Actually, if we look in the Chumash, Rachel, when she had Binyamin, she called him Ben Oini. And yet we find that Yaakov called him Binyamin. So isn't that a right? Isn't that a proof that A, the mother's, what the mother said, the mother doesn't necessarily get that privilege. And not only does the mother not necessarily get that privilege, the father could even change it. So I saw that many suggest that Binyamin is not to be considered a different name than Ben-Oini. Binyamin is the way that Ben-Oini, the way he expressed Ben-Oini. But Ramosha has a tshuva, in Shalos HaTshuvos Igros Moshe Yerodei Echel Gimel Simen Tzadik Zayin, where he was a child that the grandfather, the father's mother, did the bris milah without the knowledge of the father and also gave a name. And now the father is very upset. Says Rav Moshe that the father, the name, the real name is the name that was given at the bris, the name that the mother wanted to be given. But Rav Moshe writes that the name that the father gives, even though that's not the primary name, but Rav Moshe says that you can't just ignore what he says, what the father says as well. But here, certainly, says the Chashuki Chemet, as we discussed, the father was suffering from emotional illness. So maybe, given everything that we just said, and also including that the minig of this woman being an Ashkenazi is very much against giving the name of after a person who's alive. Moreover, the name belongs to the wife and was already given, and the father doesn't want that name, but the mother already gave the name. Rav Chaim, so this question was asked, he says, to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, and Rav Chaim Kanievsky says that at the end of the day, the legal right of giving the name belongs to the father, and therefore what the mother did is not what we follow. And he says, moreover, the fact that the mother is Ashkenazi, but the father's a Sephardi, and when you have a couple that gets married, the couple, we follow the minig of the father, and Chaim Kanievsky felt that we should follow what the father did. Our Gemara keeps us speaking about that, about what happened by the bris. And the question that the Chashuki Chama discusses, if somebody learns Torah and he was asked to be a Sandik, and that obviously would take away from his time to learn Torah, what is the halacha, that should he take the bris or not? So he quotes Rav Shach Zatzal, and Rav Shach said that somebody learning Torah on a steady basis, of course, it's talking about a person that's learning with a smada, limra Torah supersedes. However, there are many that suggest that taking on the being a sandik is certainly very important. The Gemara Masechta Megillah says Mevatn Talmud Torah, the bris milah, and the question is, when we say bris milah, does it mean to be the moil? Or when we say bris milah, does it mean to be the sandik? I saw that the Sefer Chutah Meshulash quotes that Rabbi Kiva Eger, whenever he was invited to be a moil or a sandik, he would quickly go. And that we find by a lot of Gedolei Yisrael, the stipler, Rabbi Yoshua Zatzal, did what they could to be a moil. And I saw that Rabbi Eliezer Yudel Finkel, the Mir Rosh Yeshiva, when he was ready, an elderly, weak person, asked the Brisker Rav Zatzal if he's invited to be a Sandik, should he go? And it seems that the Brisker Rav told him that he should go. And then he asked the question, well, the reason why it's so important to be a Sandik, because the Gemara says that a Sandik Misasha becomes wealthy, and we don't necessarily see that a Sandik becomes wealthy. And the answer is many different answers. One answer is that a person is only considered a Sandik that he should become wealthy if he has all of the kibbudim at the bris. If he doesn't have all the kibbudim, it doesn't count. Others suggest that a sandik maybe gets wealthy, because wealth is not necessarily only measured in financial wealth. Wealth could be measured in Ruch needs to get wealth. The stipler used to say, they used to ask the stipler, you're so anxious to always want to be a tzaddik, but you certainly never became a wealthy man. He says, of course I became a wealthy man. The fact that I was able to write all the svarim that I wrote, the fact that I had a son like Reb Chaim Kanievsky is the best wealth that anybody could ask for. So he said, I'm certainly a wealthy man. I also saw that the Gross suggests that even though we don't necessarily see that a person who's a tzaddik becomes wealthy or a different type of bracha, the fact that that maybe something that Chas V'Shalom was supposed to happen to him and didn't happen to him is also considered a measure of wealth. And therefore, there's a dilemma here. What should we do with a person who is learning on one hand, and being a tzaddik will take away from his learning? On the other hand, we see the power of being a tzaddik. And he says that really there can't be a good answer to this question. It really depends on how the person feels about this. And it seems that his suggestion is that if a person feels that being a tzaddik is what's right for him, if the person feels that being a tzaddik is what's right for him, he should take the tzaddik course. On the other hand, if the person doesn't necessarily feel that that's what's right for him, then the person should not necessarily take on the tzaddik course. Every situation should be reviewed, and every situation should be reviewed independently. Says the Gemara, but what we see from all these things is that the red or green complexion will heal. And the same thing by the raya, the lung that we're speaking about, even though it has this discoloration, it will ultimately heal, and it will ultimately heal, and it's not a trefa. Amarav Kahana. Kavda, if we have a lung that looks like a liver, shera, it's kosher. Kibisra, but if it looks like regular meat, it's trefa. Simonech, and the way to remember this halacha, he says, is the pasuk says the basar b'tzad trefa. If the raya looks like basar, it's trefa. Says the Gemara, Amar Rav Sama b'rei the Rava. Hai raya the damya ki kashusa kumarika. If you have a raya that looks like kashusa or kumarika's karkum is saffron or kugan be'yosa, like an egg, all of these types of colors are trefa. Ella, yiruka de ksheira. So says the Gemara, if we just learned that yiruka is a good color, ask the Gemara, hechi damya, what is the example that it is? Says the Gemara, kikarsi, when it's green like leek. Amravina otam bereya, if there's if the place of the reya is closed up, where air can't enter, says the Gemara, Masina Sakina Vakarina La. We should bring a knife and cut that spot and examine. E is Bamuglob, if this pus there, Vade Mach Smuglahu, it's the pus that caused this, and it's Shera. Viloi, if not, Masinan Allah Gatva Roika, we should put on the place a feather or saliva. E Mafsasa, if they will move, then we see that there's a place for air to pass, and it's kshera. Vilay, but if it can't pass, that means there's a full closure, and it's trefa. Amar Rav Yosef Krum, Sha'olam Achas, Machmas Maka, Dureya, if you have a scab that formed because of a wound on the reya, ain't a krum. The halacha is that a scab is not going to be considered an adequate way of closing up the reya. Vamar Rab Yosef, a Gemara that we learned in our previous year. Hai Rei the Afsha, if we hear a hissing sound from the lung, Yidin Hecha Afsha, if we're able to identify from where it is coming, Menichan Legatva, we should put on top of that spat a feather, a gila, a piece of straw, a roika, or some saliva. Im Mitzavtsefa, if it moves, so that's a proof that there's a hole there, and it's trefa. Viloi, if it doesn't move, Kshera. If we can't identify where the sound is coming from, Says the Gemara, mash the pshuri. We should bring a bowl of lukewarm water, and put the lung into it. But says the Gemara, don't put into very warm water the kaftsi, because what's going to happen is it's going to cause the lung to shrivel up, and even if there's a hole, nothing's going to come up. But kaririloi, you shouldn't put it into cold water. Also, the matarshi, it stiffens the lung. El b'kinlevi b'shurei, we should put it into lukewarm water. Im tzavtzafa, if we see that it bubbles, so that's a proof that there's a hole and it's a trefa. V'loi, if not, shera. Tatar inkav, iloi inkav. What I, the sound, because what happened over here is that the bottom membrane has a hole, but the upper membrane does not have a hole, and therefore, since the upper membrane is still very much intact, therefore halacha is the ray is not a trefa. We heard this hissing sound. The hissing sound, says the Gemara, zika the beni beni. It's the ear that's between the lower membrane, which is pierced, versus the upper membrane, which is not pierced. The Beis Yosef says that if one put the lung in hot water, he can no longer perform the test. Even if afterwards he's going to put the lungs into lukewarm water, the results will not be valid, because we have to be concerned that they had a hole and now got sealed when it was put in the hot water. Rashi, also, the Gemara also said cold water stiffens the lung. But now the question is, why will be the halacha if you put it into cold water? So there's different approaches in the Rishonim. According to Rashi, what the cold water is only going to make it worse than it really is. And therefore, if somebody used the cold water and it still passed the test, it's fine. The Ran disagrees. And the Ran says that the cold water causes the hole to close. And since the cold water causes the hole to close, just like we said now, that if it's hot water, we can no longer do the test. Even so too, by the cold water, that it's no longer going to be able to be tested once it was put into the cold water. And that's the psak that the Shulchan Aruch quotes. It says, if there's liquid in the lung, the halacha is kshera. Alma kesarim, because obviously the opinion is, as even though there's something going on inside this lung, but since it didn't go through to the outside, it didn't puncture to the outside, it's not a problem. Ase Rabbi Lula asked the Gemara, the Mishnah said, Hareish nikva shechasra, that the animals are trefa. And what is the definition, asked the Gemara, chasra? That it's missing from the outside of the lung. Asked the Gemara, so that's nikva. That's in the same category as nikva. Elav, what must that obviously mean? That something's doing inside. And doesn't this prove, says the Gemara, the Shmamna Chsam Bifnim Shmei Chsarn, that something is doing from the inside, it's a problem? Says Marloi, Loi Lom B'chutz. When we said Chutz, it's M'b'chutz. I asked the Gemara if it's M'b'chutz. Isn't that already Nikva? Or the Kamrit Nikva? Like Tzricha, says the Gemara, this halach is being taught, Lev Shim Dama Achit Noikiv Lebesim Sinus, that the hole has to go all the way till the bronchi, says the Gemara. When is that applicable? Hanimili nekav de lesbe chsaron, when nothing of the lung is actually missing. Ava nekav de lesbe chsaron, if it has a hole and it's missing part of the meat, I feel of Shimon Maida that it will be treif, even though the hole doesn't go down all the way to the simpinus. Rav Chanina cholish. Rav Chanina was ill. Ola gabei Rav Nosson kol gedolei Adar, Rav Nosson all the great Talmid Chachamim, they brought to him this type of array that had liquid inside. Fichshra. Amar Rava, says Rava, this that it was done this way, for who? The Kaimi Sipinus, that the bronchi, the pipes inside the lung, are still intact. Amar Rav Acha Berei, the Rava Larashi, Minoyadinan, how will we know if that is the case, if the Sipinus are intact? Omle, Masinet saw the kunya. We bring a bowl that's made out of earthenware that is coated with lead, so it's extremely smooth. And we cut open the lung and we pour out whatever was inside the lung. If it has white spots in that liquid, then trefa. But that's a proof that the bronchi are starting to dissolve. And if the bronchi is starting to dissolve, then the animals are trefa. If that's not the case, then it's going to be kshera. Amar Rav Nachman, Reya Shinamuka, a Reya that became soft, the Krum Shalai Kayim, but its outer membranes are still there, kshera. Tan Namahokin says the Gemara, so do we learn a Braisa. Reya Shinamuka, the Krum Shalai Kayim, a Filu Machsekis Revius, even if it's holding so much liquid of Revius, kshera. Nitla Shalchufis Shalok, if the womb of the animal was removed, says the Gemara's Kshera. Hisliya Kovitshala, if the liver became wormy, says the Gemara Zaya Maisa, they who had such a question. Volale b'nei Asya Shol Shugolim Liyavna, the b'nei Masya came three times, three consecutive Yom Tovim to Yavna to ask this question, and the regular Shlishi, the third time that they came to this question, they asked the question, they were told that this is kosher. The way the Mepharshim explained the Gemara, they came Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. They kept on deliberating. All the Talmid Chacham would gather in Yavna on by the Yom Tovim. They deliberated three times, and after all that deliberation, they were able to determine that this Reya is kosher. We've been speaking very extensively in our shiurim about the Reya and that the Reya has to be examined. And of course, a very important discussion when we speak about the Reya, and we spoke about the Sirchis, and we spoke about checking for the Sirchis. There's a machloikis in Shulchan Aruch Yerideya, Simen Lametes Sif Yud, that the Shulchan Aruch paskins that any Sircha, and the Shulchan Aruch says, a Sircha which is Dak Gechuta Sira, which is very minimal, the halacha is, it's considered a sircha, and the animal's not kosher. The Rama, however, says that what we're allowed to do is check the sirchas, and we check the sirchas, and if we see that the sircha comes off easily, then the halacha is that animal's still kosher. It's interesting to point out that the Shlo HaKadosh, speaking about the minig of the, about the psak of the Rama, says, Levilti Shemaya el minig haraza. One should not follow that terrible minig. He says, Vatam bani, hine mitzav eschem, shloi toich lebosar, hanich shemimuach, b'makim shasicha hois batrif mitzad adin. He says, a place where there's a sircha, and you're going to try to examine that sircha, and say it's kosher, chas v'sholem, one should not eat it. So this is the beginning of the minig of check of glat kosher meat versus kosher meat. Glat means smooth in Yiddish, means that there are no sirchas. Kosher means that it has sirchas, but as we learned that they come off easily. The Mepharskim explain, as we spoke about earlier in our shir, that Rashi explains that the issue of a sircha is that there's probably a hole under it. And therefore, when it's a very small sircha, which is called ririn, Darach HaShulchan discusses this in Yerudei Simen Lametes, Sif Chabez, and Sif Chav Gimel. He says that when you have this type of a rear, it's not what the Gemara is calling a sircha. Something that's called a sircha, a Gemara was very clear that is treif. But if it's a rear, that's not what the Gemara was discussing. And therefore, if the rear is easily removed, and of course, the rear is easily removed, and we don't find any hole under the rear, then the Aruch HaShulchan, based on what the Rama says that animal will be considered a kosher animal.